I'd like to welcome Dr. Jeremias Ressler, giving us a talk about artificial intelligence or the end of the world as we know it. Please enjoy it and give me a big hand.
Hello, and thanks for coming. When I thought about how to structure this talk, I thought that it was probably a good idea to make an outline like this, which means that it will give a broad overview and then deep dive into what I think is most interesting about that. But first, so this is a talk that also takes people from where they are and tries to connect with what we know or we think we know. And most people get some of their knowledge from movies as well. So I thought it would be a good idea to give a very short introduction about what Hollywood thinks is the fate of humanity and AI, and also it's a very easy start for us. So just 2 minutes of what Hollywood thinks.
Let's talk about artificial intelligence. In a recent op-ed column, you said, and I quote, success in creating artificial intelligence would be the biggest event in human history. Unfortunately, it might also be the last. Are you saying that robots are going to destroy humanity? And is that a scientific argument or the pitch for an amazing movie?
There's a story that scientists built an intelligent computer. The first question they asked it was, is there a God? The computer replied, there is now, and a bolt of lightning struck the plug, so it couldn't be turned off.
Holy shit, that's the most terrifying story I've ever heard.
Yes.
In the beginning, there was man, and for a time, it was good. But humanity's so-called civil societies soon fell victim to vanity and corruption. Then man made the machine in his own likeness.
A digital frontier to reshape the human condition.
Replicants are like any other machine. They're either a benefit or a hazard.
Thus did man become the architect of his own demise.
Try to create a suit of armor around the world. Artificial intelligence.
You're all going to die down here.
Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague. We are the cure.
To protect humanity, some humans must be sacrificed. To ensure your future, some freedoms must be surrendered.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
It can't be bargained with, it can't be reasoned with, and it absolutely will not stop.
I was designed to save the world. There's only one path to peace. Their extinction.
Joshua?
How about a nice game of chess?
So as you can see, there are much more movies about that topic than one would probably realize when first thinking about it. And yeah, some of them point to a certain direction, which I want to discuss very, in just a second. So when we talk about artificial intelligence, what are we talking about, really? What is intelligence? Well, the thing is that nobody knows. So There's no agreed upon definition what intelligence is. So a very intelligent man, namely Alan Turing, said, okay, if we can come up with a common definition of intelligent, we all agree that humans are intelligent. So if we build a machine that we can't distinguish from a human, the machine has to be intelligent as well. And this is how they designed the Turing test. It was designed as a chat or conversation test at the time, but this is the idea behind it. Because, you know, if we can distinguish man from machine, it has to have intelligence, whatever intelligence is. And there's a running joke in the artificial intelligence community, which is that a problem is an artificial intelligence problem as long as it's not been solved. So, for instance, during the 70s and 80s, they thought that chess would be a very hard problem to solve, and a computer had to be intelligent in order to play chess. And once this problem was solved, people said, ah, that's not real intelligence, right? So they said, okay, as soon as we can come up with a machine that can understand language and the subtleties of jokes and ambiguities and all of that, then it sure has to be intelligent. Well, not so much, right? And the last the last frontier that fell was the Go game, the game where they said, okay, there's more possibilities than stars in the known universe. So if we can build a machine that can play, that can win at Go, it has to be intelligent. And again, it turns out this is not really what we understand. It is artificial intelligence, but not in a very general sense, not in a human-like sense. Still, this has created an hype about AI, and the question is, why now? Well, as I just said, AlphaGo just recently beats, well, 2 years ago already, beats humans, and AlphaGo Zero beats AlphaGo 100-0. And another thing is that the number of calculation power went down because the algorithms got more efficient. So this is the reason that AI has come to media public attention again. Okay, what does it mean? Where are we now? Well, if I had to describe an AI today, I would say, okay, it lacks empathy, so it can't understand what humans think and how they feel. It has poor impulse control. It still has problems with planning and foresight and poor behavioral constraints. Actually, this is a textbook definition of a psychopath. So, in the movies that you just saw, there was a common theme, which is the war between artificial intelligence or robots, in most cases, and humans. And I just wanted to go very briefly into how realistic that scenario is. Because if you think about humans, then we have the synapses have a speed of 200 megahertz per second to do calculations. And the information travels with about 100 meters per second along the arm. So this means essentially that if you want to throw a ball, you have to give the commands in right order. You have to give the command to let go of the ball, even if you in that movement, because the speed of your synapses is so slow that at that position the brain already has to say let go, although you let go there. So that's the speed of muscles and brain connections. And to get, like, if we think about war, to get a soldier or a, you know, combat-ready unit, it's 16 years at the least. I mean, if you think about, you know, child warriors, it can be, I don't know, 12 or 10, but you're in the range of years. If you think about machines, on the other hand, we already have 2 gigahertz of calculation speed, and the speed of in which the information travels, it's almost speed of light. And if you have a factory, you can output combat-ready units by the hour. So if we ever come to that situation that we have a war, we have already lost. There's no chance that we can win. If you think about robots in factories, it used to be that they are in cages to make sure that humans don't get harmed, right? You have a cage, and if someone enters that cage, the robot stops and goes into some halting position so it doesn't hurt humans. Well, today, you can have robots and humans work together because the robots can, they analyze the human, and from muscle tension and stuff, they can derive that the human is gonna make a movement before the human himself realizes that he's going to make that movement. And that's the speed at which computers outperform humans. So there's no chance that we win a war against that. Actually, I mean, it's a pretty nice plot for Hollywood, but it doesn't even make sense to create robots of that size, right? If you want to beat humanity, you create robots that humans can't fight about, that can't fight with, because they are so small. Then you end up with gray goo. Robots of nanometer size that you can't shoot and can't kill, and victory is instant. This is the reason why Elon Musk, in a recent, so like 2 years ago or 1 year ago, when the North, the thing with North Korea was a bit rough, so to say, he had a tweet where he said, "You shouldn't be worried about North Korea. You should be worried about AI, because this is the real problem. This is the real danger." So there are some myths in concern with AI and some hard facts. The myth is that only ludits worry about AI, so only people like end of day doomsdayers, as you say, they worry about AI like they did about the year 2K problem and the Mayan calendar and whatever it is that currently is on vogue to worry about. But as you just saw, even Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates and many AI researchers are concerned. And the usual plot is that AI turns evil or consciousness. And the fact or the reality is that we have what we create with AI is a very powerful optimization, a problem solver. And if we optimize towards the wrong thing, then this could be very, very problematic. So even if we get everything right and just have a slight misalignment with the goals that we give the AI, then this is a problem. Again, the myth is that robots are the main concern with Terminator and stuff, but in reality, it doesn't need a physical appearance, like no robot is needed. It's just connected to the internet and shuts us down or does whatever it wants to. There's a a slight joke that exemplifies the problem. "You are the most advanced robot yet. Out of my fear for the future, I order you to destroy all unfriendly human-created intelligences you meet moments before all humans are killed." So this is what I mean with slightly misaligned and slightly ambiguous goals. So the problem is that even if you give it a goal that is very broad, like make humans happy or make me happy, that could mean, what does make me happy even mean, right? Create smiling faces or create faces that are put in serotonin, like, you know, the drug that makes you happy. Is that what we want when we say make me happy? There's a Greek mythology that's about Midas, King Midas, and he wished that whatever he touched would turn into gold. And his wish was fulfilled. And the problem was that he couldn't eat anymore because all his food turned to gold. And he couldn't drink anymore because all his drinks and wine and water turned into gold. And even his own daughter, when he touched her, turned into gold. So his wish was fulfilled by the word, by the letter. And it wasn't certainly not what he really wanted. And the same thing could happen if we create an AI. Whatever we wish for, we get. We should make that it's the real, that it's really what we want. Um, Another thing is that if we want to teach the AI morality, what morality do we use? Mine? Yours? His? The morality of someone living in China or in Russia? The thing is that morality vastly diverges, and even my morality is not consistent. Like if I would be the sole creator of the AI, I have things that I learned, that I got from what parents told me and what I saw in movies, whatever, that doesn't fit together very good, that is very inconsistent. And so this creates problems. And another thing is, when we talk about AI, most people don't realize how vast the difference of intelligences is. So if you have an intelligence staircase where you have an ant and a monkey and a human, then a very general intelligence that can improve itself, that can improve its own hardware and its own software, that's what will cause an intelligence explosion. So this intelligence will, within minutes, days, months, whatever, will get much more intelligent than humans is. So this would look more like that. So the difference between a human intelligence and an ant intelligence, as you can see there, is not comparable. So we can't even estimate, there's no way we can know how such an intelligence would work or what it would want or how it would treat us and how we could keep control. There's a very popular thing that Elon Musk said, that if we are building a road and there's an ant hill, we don't hate ants, but still we want to build the road, so goodbye ant hill. So if AI wants to do something and we are in the way, it doesn't care. It doesn't even need to hate us. It just we are just, you know, casualties. We happen to be in the way, and that's bad for us. So as I said earlier, we have an AI hype now, and the thing is that many people think that we are almost there. And with almost, the question is, they don't know if it's 5 years or 50 years, but it's not like 200 years. So we really don't know yet, but we might be somewhere near the verge where it gets interesting. And now this was the broad part of the talk. And now I want to get into the specific part. Because most people, when they talk about AI, they concentrate on the end outcome, the final outcome. What happens if AI is very general and it's much more intelligent than us? But actually, if we get there, we are lucky. Because in between, there happens a lot that still threatens us, even if intelligence is not general yet. And this is the part where I now want to talk about. The part I worry about. So, as I said, we have this is a time frame, roughly. We have today, tomorrow, short term, whatever that means. It could be like 5 years or 10 years, we don't really know. It could be 2 years, we really don't know. And long term outcome, like the autonomous general intelligence that I just talked about. That's on top of there, right? And today we are here. And today, AI looks like that.
Now, everything doesn't go exactly the way it's supposed to.
So this was a year ago, and today that robot is much better. It can even do looping saltos in midair, so it's much more advanced than that, but it's still not perfect. So it's still struggling, and it's still not like in mass production. So AI today has its problems. So even when it wants to find the difference between a chicken wing and a hash puppy, I mean, it's hard, right? And even if it can get the difference, so there are reports that, for instance, AI can beat doctors when it comes to finding cancer on MRI. Well, actually, pigeons can do that. So you can, within 14 days, you can train a pigeon to beat doctors at recognizing cancer cells in MRI scans. So it's not that hard of a problem, right? But still, it's interesting. We're getting there. So I want to talk about the problems mostly, because the good things we just take, right? If something good happens, it's not bad. It's, you know, we are thankful and everything's good. But I want to talk about the dangers and the problems, the potential dangers and the potential problems. And today, one of the most pressing problems is bias. Bias in AI. And now I want to give an example that doesn't even use AI. So there's a racist soap dispenser.
Nice. Okay, Noel, you try it. Come to Johan. Too black?
Too black.
Yeah.
What are come,
again. Come again, Sashi.
Hello.
No, I need too black.
What
I
have to do to get
what do you have to do? That's how racial this thing is.
Yeah.
I think it's a piece of white.
It's a napkin, a shoulder.
Napkin again.
Right, put your hand
on. What's it called on a hand?
Man, black man getting fight.
All over, boy.
So, that doesn't have anything to do with AI, right? But it exemplifies a problem. If people design something in certain ways, it probably exposes bias. And probably most of that bias is even unknown until it becomes apparent. So here is a very, very illustrative example. But the same thing happens with AI. And in that case, it's mostly very subtle and very hard to find. So for instance, there's a Google translator. It's biased. There's no gender in the Turkish language. So if you translate he is a babysitter and she is a doctor to Turkish and translate the exact same thing back into English, then suddenly she's the babysitter and he is the doctor. Because that's bias. The algorithm has to make a decision, like the gender information gets lost when it's translated into Turkish, and there's no unbiased outcome, so to say. So when you translate back, you have to make that decision, and this is the bias that's baked into the system. And there are many more things. Like when you look, like this has been fixed, right? And the same is true. This is just past examples that has probably most of them have been fixed in the meantime, but they exemplify the problem. When you like 2 years ago, you searched for three black teenagers, you would come up with mugshots. Where, on the other hand, if you searched for three white teenagers, you would find stock photos. So this is just, you know, bias right there. And another thing is that the Facebook news feed has AI, and it optimizes for engagement. So it shows you the news that it thinks will get you to react, to click or comment or do whatever. And like 2 years ago, you couldn't have you only have the smiley and the thumbs up symbol, you didn't have the thumbs down symbol. So when there was a news feed about the Ferguson outcry in 2014, so there was a black guy that was shot, and it basically was ignored by Facebook because it said, okay, you can't react, you can't comment on that very easily, you can't give a thumbs up on that, so it basically was ignored. It didn't show up at all in the news feed in Facebook. You had to go to Twitter to find that. And the same thing for lawns. Today, if you go to a bank in America and you want a loan, then usually the guy that sits next to you or in front of you is not making the decision. It's an algorithm in the back that's making the decision. The guy just tells you the answer. So if you apply for a loan, and you have certain, like, if you have the wrong name, and if you come from the wrong neighborhood or went to the wrong school, then your probabilities of getting a loan are reduced. So it has been shown that from such additional features or additional information, AI can derive, for instance, your race or your gender very accurately. And it can, for instance, estimate whether you are going to be pregnant or whether you are going to have whatever, certain diseases. So your probability of getting a loan is reduced if you have the wrong name. And you can't even fight for that. Like, you can't sue them or something. You have no way to know what's going on behind the black box that the AI is. There are examples where this comes to surface, where it gets publicly exposed. But this is the exception. Usually, you just don't know. Something happens in your life, and you just don't know why. You don't get the loan. You get a higher price, whatever, and you don't know why. There's this example of this teacher, and from the local school, she from the chief of the school, she got a recognition because she was such a good teacher. And they have a system in the U.S. that the least performing 5% of the teachers are. They are let go. So the least performing 5% are let go, and because her students were bad, so she had, you know, statistically bad luck. She had bad performing students, and so in the system she showed up as being a very bad teacher. So in the 1 month she gets a recognition from the local principal of the school, and the next month her work is gone because the algorithm says so. And this, you know, this is an example that's very drastic. So it was very obvious that it's a problem. But usually, you lose your job and you don't know why. Because AI, in that case, is a black box. And there are other examples. In the US, for instance, whether you get... So the likelihood that you end up in prison, or the likelihood... So there's an algorithm that suggests to the judge what he should do, whether you should get probation or whether you should how long the sentence should be. And there's an algorithm who helps the judges be faster, and it has the same bias baked into the system. So you just get you go to prison longer, and you can't get on parole because the algorithm says so. And this is reality today. So this is not something that's theoretically happening sometime in the future. This happens today. These are examples that happened already. So the question is, I mean, of course, the judge could say, you know, I know better than the algorithm, but how high is the probability? What's the likelihood of the judge ruling against the system where he had to justify himself? If you just, you know, obeys the order, then he can say our algorithm said so. But if he decides differently, then he has to justify. So how many of you do obey technology if technology suggests something? Okay. Well, I wouldn't want to drive without ones. If the traffic light says red, you stop, right? 10 years ago, when you wanted to drive and you wanted to go somewhere where you didn't know, then you probably had a look into the map. Well, today I just get into the car, right? And in 10 years from now, I won't even be allowed driving. So the thing is that we, possibility to make mistakes is reduced, but also our power. So this leads to people actually stop thinking about whether they should obey technology or not. This is a real problem, that they stop thinking. So just recently, in the pharmacy that I go to, like, I come from countryside, and this is a very small village. When I go to the pharmacy, there's a robot taking care of the medics. And if that robot breaks, or if there's a power outage or something, she can't give me the medics, because she doesn't know where they are. There's no chance. The thing is too big, and it's not human understandable. There's no sensible way, no order that she can understand. So if the power is out, she has no way of retrieving the medics. And there are other things, like life-changing things. Today, when you want a match, you go to the internet and you get a suggestion, right? So there's an algorithm picking your life partner for you. And the same thing with jobs. There is an algorithm picking your job for you. And on the employer side, there's the same thing. You have a lot of applicants, and some applicants are rejected just by the algorithm. There's no human ever seeing them. The algorithm decides. And as I said, with bias, this is a problem. But there's also other problems, like the login effect of preferences. So once you decide for a certain kind of movie, you get shown the same movie, the same sort of movie. So you watch more of that movie, and you get recommended more of that kind of movies, and you watch more of that. And this is the same is true for political influence and for many other things. So this is a lock-in effect. Okay, this is, as I said, this is stuff that happens today. This is not the far future. This is today, yesterday, 3 years ago. If we talk about tomorrow, things get more interesting because you, for instance, get errors. If today the AI makes an error, I don't get a job, or I find the wrong person to be with, for instance. But if AI decides about more relevant things, then it could be life-death decision. And another thing that's important is unemployment. So as I said, already the second person died because of errors by self-driving cars. We should see that in relation, because given the amount of kilometers that the self-driving cars have driven, it's the safest way to drive. But still, people die. So that's the trade-off there is. And, yeah, jobs. So as I said, I believe in that. So I believe that there's no single task that AI will not be able to perform in some time in the future. And this has dramatic results for us. So not only will we need to think about how our society works and what all the people do if they don't have the possibility to work anymore, but also, as I said, this in the past, we had situations like that, like the Machine Breakers. This was a movement where the people wanted to destroy the machines in factories. And actually, there was a law in 1812 that the destruction of such machines would be penalized by death. So people would be killed because they destroyed machines by death. And this is the one thing that people don't, they lose their income and they don't have the possibility to pay anything anymore. But the other thing is that what we do, most of the people, they are defined by their jobs. So if you have a look, so this is from Parship, for instance. This is a dating site in Germany. And as you can see, because it's anonymized, so you don't see the names, you just see the job title. So the job title is so essential that it can replace, or that it's more important than the name, actually. What I want to say is that that people define themselves by their jobs. And if you take that job away, for much people, what is left is the question. Another thing we have to think about, as I said, is how we deal with a growing, and this is already happening, with a growing disparity of income and wealth. So because machines some machines are expensive, there will be some people that have, that own these machines, and these machines then will create wealth, and there will be a very drastic income gap. This is especially true for the US. There's a very interesting YouTube video that I recommend you watching, and that the statistics say that the population of people working in agriculture went down from 90% in 1790 to like 1 or 2% in 2000. So many people that used to work in agriculture don't need to do that anymore. They found different jobs, and this, the problem is that this won't be true for the next thing that comes. So if AI replaces jobs, there won't be much jobs left. We used to think that when we then the internet would come, it would destroy all the big companies that you know, like all the like the Walmarts and the MGM, the Paramounts of the world, because everyone has access to information, everyone has access to marketplace, everyone can create his own movies, his own poems, his own songs, his own whatever, and just sell them in the internet. Like the internet would be democratizing. And the thing is that this is actually the opposite of what happened. Because of the network effect, we now have smaller companies that are bigger than ever. Like Amazon is like one of the biggest companies ever seen, as well as Google, Facebook, and oh, I forgot Apple in the list. So these four companies alone are the essentially the major players in the market, also when it comes to AI. And the problem is that it has a self-emphasizing effect. So users interact with their companies and create data, and that data is then fed into the AI algorithms, and that AI algorithms get much more powerful, which increases the likelihood of people using those companies, which again generates data, and so on. So as I said, tomorrow these will be the challenges that we're going to face. Errors of AI system that could result in death, and unemployment. The next things are even more drastic. So as you can see, it's the same thing. Like if you have a tool that is more powerful, or with power comes, I don't know the English term. So the more powerful you are, the more you have to watch what you do. And the same is true for AI. If you have a powerful AI, then what it can do gets more drastic. So the criticality of the worst case scenario increases. Do you have any idea when the first lethal autonomous weapon was developed? Okay, who thinks it was developed in 2000? So everybody raise their hands, please. Everybody raise their hands. And now those who think it was developed after 2000, lower their hands. Those who think it was developed in the Second World War, lower their hands. Those who think it was developed in the First World War, lower their hands. Those who think it was developed in the 18th century or later, lower their hands. Okay, who thinks it was developed in the 17th century? Okay, and who thinks it was developed in the 16th century? Okay, so actually it's a landmine, and it was developed in the 16th century. Of course, we have much more sophisticated landmines today, but this is the first time that humans came up with a weapon that could kill people on its own, like make the kill decision, so to say, although the decision by the time was a trigger, in a way it can kill on its own. If you think about AI in war, it gets very interesting, because this is already partly happening. We have drones that are already deployed, that work with AI, that have minimal input from users. So right now, we don't have autonomous weapons, which means that the final decision still is a human decision to make. Like the last push of the button still is done by the human, but everything else before that is pretty anonymous right now. We have systems that help on the ground. We have even systems with guns on them in various installments. And right now, there's even a nano or mini robot developed that has a lethal injection of something that kills as soon as it's injected into the human body. And there's a very interesting, so if you're interested into that, there's a very interesting season on Netflix that's called Metalhead. I recommend watching that. That's very interesting. And, who knows Metalhead? Who saw that? Okay, now you will be reminded of it. This is something that terrified many people when they saw it. It was some sort of outcry on Twitter. But I think there's even more terrifying stuff. So this is a weapon, this is a video.
It's 3 grams of chic explosive. This is how it works. Did you see that? That little bang is enough to penetrate the skull and destroy the contents. They used to say guns don't kill people. People do.
Well, not anymore, apparently. So this is a drone that carries some, as you saw, some explosive with it and has some cameras, and it even has face recognition. So essentially, it's a bullet that you can program for a very individual target. And if you think about not only one of them, and it's cheap, like in mass production, that's, I don't know, $10 or $20. So in mass production, you can have 100 of them. And how do you safeguard against that, right? Again, there's an interesting thing in Black Mirror talking about the same thing, or having the same thing as contents. It's Hated in the Nation. So I recommend that you watch that if you think about that, or if you're interested in that. It's German. how many people were killed by drones last year? So usually people think it's like in the tens or in the hundreds, but just last year it was at some point, like in, I don't think I see that, I think in April or something, in March, right? In March, over 1,000 people were killed in Iraq and Syria by US drones. And US is not even in war with Iraq and Syria. So these are so-called terrorists that are killed. And there are stories about people there was a little boy that was interviewed by The Guardian because his parent and his brother was killed, and he said that they weren't ISIS or anything, they weren't terrorists. Well, 2 weeks later, he was dead as well. And there's another thing you can, so for instance, in the Las Vegas massacre in 2012, I think, there was a guy with a machine gun that wasn't accessible by the police. So police had already, two officers had already been killed when they tried to take out that guy. So what they did is they put a bomb essentially on a robot, rolled the robot in and let the bomb explode. So the guy was dead and the robot suffered like minor injuries. It could be repaired, no problem. Another thing is then if you think about surveillance, like if you don't think about actually harming people, but just watching people. So maybe someone knows Batman, where they turn all the iPhones, all the mobile phones into spying machines by activating the microphone and activating the cameras on it. Well, the same thing essentially is happening right now in China. They are putting video cameras everywhere on public places, and they are requesting data from people in order to optimize their cities. So you get, if you let the Chinese government use your personal data from your, like, if you install the app, then you get faster transportation and cheaper transportation. So this is essentially turning people into spies, right? I mean, it's not a problem directly, but it can lead to problems. And also, you all probably all know about AI influencing, like as it was used with Trump on Facebook. There was a big discussion about that, and it can be used everywhere. So if you have an AI that can talk like a human, or can essentially at least sound like a human on chat, then it can try to influence people. And it has been shown that this is very effective. So if you talk, like if you're in a forum and you talk to 20 people, and 20 people have a different opinion than you, then you are very likely to take on that opinion. Well, if all of those 20 people are AI systems, which is possible, then you can change the opinion of practically not everyone, but large parts of the society, right? As it says here, I can be in 30 million places at once. If you run AI, you can clone it, you can copy it, no problem. And this is also the reason why Vladimir Putin last year had said, whoever becomes the leader in AI will become the ruler of the world. Because essentially, this is what you can do. You can influence large parts of any population. And in the language doesn't even matter. You can influence like Chinese people, Indian people, American people. Doesn't matter. And there have been discussions about AI-based war, cyber war. So just recently, like in 2016, there was the largest ever theft of from a bank, and $81 million were taken by the thieves, and it turns out this was a cyber attack, and it could, in principle, has been AI-based. We don't know that. But as soon as you have AI, you can do that. You can hack any system, you can get the money where you want it, and you can use that money to fuel your own resources, to buy more computing power, to buy more whatever you need in order to increase the speed and the number of attacks. So this, again, is a very, very interesting way to create a war. So what I want to say on that point is that, as I said, the criticality of the worst case scenario increases with the might of the AI, as we get AI that is more powerful than more interesting or more dangerous become the scenarios that can lead to. So now I want to go back to the more general thing. Most species on our planet have been extinct. So, like, if you take a statistic, 99% of all species that lived on planet Earth have been extinct until now. So this is basically the trajectory. You have the life beam, and at some point you have extinction. And it could be that AI is our way to go extinct. And there are some people who argue for that, for instance, using the Fermi paradox. So if you don't know that, it says that, you know, we have a number of in the Milky Way, we have a number of stars. If you say 1% is sun-like, you still have a lot of stars. If you say 1% is Earth-like planets, you still have a lot of planets. If you say 1% have life, and 1% of that life is intelligent, you end up essentially with a large number of alien races that you would think would exist somewhere in the Milky Way. And the thing is, when we look in the Milky Way, we see nothing. So where are all the aliens, right? this essentially is the Fermi paradox. And one of the theories behind that is that there is maybe some great filter. So something. So this is a calculation of probabilities, right? So these are assumptions. And somewhere there has to be an error. So some probability of life becoming, you know, going into existence or becoming intelligent or whatever is not as it seems to be. And the question is, this great filter, is it behind us? Have we passed it already? Is it very unlikely for life to come into existence? Or is it before us? Is it very unlikely for life, once it gets intelligent, to not kill itself? And that is the question. I mean, there are possibly other solutions to that. So maybe we are just looking in the wrong direction or not understanding the signals that we receive. We don't know yet. But this could be that, you know, an indicator that AI is not a good idea to create. But the thing is that we have no way to opt out. Like, if we, like in Germany, if we want to say, okay, we don't like the thought of AI, let's skip the thing, let's call it off, it's just not possible, right? Like China, Russia, America, all the individual companies, they will pursue that goal. So we can't say we are not going to do it. And of course, we want it, because it also has many benefits. It's not only dangerous, it's also benefits. You get higher productivity, you get fewer human errors, and better decisions in general. And in the long term, it could even lead to better societies, solved war, no hunger, no diseases. And if you think very far ahead, like general, like intelligence explosions, it could even lead to immortality and full space exploration. And this is a very good thing. For instance, this is a statistics from the World Economic Forum, and it says that only Nigeria would need 700,000 additional doctors to reach the OECD level. So our level of medical support, and it would need approximately 300, with existing institutions, it would need 300 years to train that many doctors. With AI, it could be solved in 20 years. This is a good thing, I think. So, as I said, with a general intelligence, if we ever get there, we could be the single one species that reaches immortality. Okay, and this could happen fast. Like, things are changing. So the estimates that you saw, these are like, you know, we don't know. These are just rough estimates by whatever. It could be totally wrong. So it could happen like in 2 years. We don't know yet. And you should be concerned. Like, you should care now, because it could happen fast. Well, if you don't believe me, in 1997, people were told to not get into strangers' cars and to not meet people from the internet. Today, you summon strangers from the internet to get into their cars. My mom told me to not sit too close in front of the TV, because it's bad for the eyes. Well, today, we have an exponential growth of computing power, and people, like, the human brain is not wired to understand exponential growth. It just doesn't work. The human brain doesn't work that way. So if you take the calculations per second starting in 1940, then if you have an exponential increase, then this is what it looks like. So this essentially means if we reach the power necessary for a general intelligence in 2025, then in 2024 it's only half the power, and today it's only 128th the power. So a very low level. So if today we have computers that are intelligent as mice or as chimpanzees, then they will reach maturity very fast. And the thing is that intelligence, like artificial intelligence, will not stop at the human level intelligence station. As I said earlier, it will happen that the artificial intelligence will be vastly superior to us and very fast. So, and even if everything happens out perfectly, like if the cyber war doesn't kill us and the AI and the robots don't kill us and Putin is not killing us and, you know, if we have an AI that's perfectly aligned with our goals and everything's fine, then we still don't have any jobs anymore, and not in creativity, and not, no, in, we have nothing to do. We are living in paradise. We get the answer, and we have to find out what is the question. So, this essentially was my talk. Now, the question is, what can you do if you think, or if you think this was a wake-up call and you think, okay, we can't leave the space to AI. Well, first thing is today what we need to do because of bias, the problem that I mentioned, we need to cultivate algorithm suspicion. So we need to scrutinize. We need to ask questions. We need to not trust the algorithm. Just because you don't understand which biases it has, it does not mean that AI has no biases. And AI does not give you the out of ethics free card. So if you for instance, want, if you have to make a decision about a loan or about the parole of someone, then you have to make the decision. So it doesn't, just because an algorithm can give you the answer based on statistics, doesn't mean that the answer is correct. Like, we have messy human decisions to make, and just because it's an algorithm doesn't mean that the decision is not messy anymore. And you also, in the long-term future, what you can do is to raise awareness, like, you know, spread the word, and contribute to one of those things. So Future of Life Institute is concerned with AI, OpenAI is concerned with how we can make that safe, and Neuralink is one possibility where they try to make a symbiotic possibility to use AI within your brain. So a way to directly connect to the internet, so to say, with your brain. So I'm just about me. I'm from Retest. We actually use AI in production. So we are the company or a company that uses AI to test software. So I think I know some things about AI. And the idea is basically that we find differences in the software. When you use software and you have a version 1, then you have a version 2. So we show you what's the difference, and that difference can be created by AI or can be found by AI. If you want to read a bit further on the topic of this, there's a very good blog that I recommend. It's called Wait But Why. It has many interesting topics, some of which are AI, but many more. So this is very recommended. If you want to watch a movie that's concerned, like a movie that's actually realistic, I recommend watching either Transcendence or Animatrix. And if you want to read a good story about it, a book about it, then I recommend either Quality Land or Origin. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's now time for Q&A. If anybody has a question, please give me a hand and I hand over you the microphone so we can all benefit.
Thanks for the very entertaining talk.
Thanks.
As you pointed out, there are biases in algorithms, but I personally feel that this is the time that we are in the crossroads of deconstructing many social constructs, because that is what humans are supposed to do in order to make algorithms better.
Yeah.
The more we focus on, you know, making algorithms better, we never focus on the human side of it, perhaps that needs to be addressed, and that is something that one should see in anticipation of a better AI, or one should worry about the human side of AI rather than just on the algorithms.
That's a very good point. That's what I try to emphasize with a racist hand soap dispenser, that it's not a problem that has anything to do with AI, that it's a human problem that gets transported into AI. Yeah, thanks. Yeah?
I didn't want to pinpoint it, but I also wanted to mention that within the bias of the talk that you mentioned, when you mentioned judge, you always mentioned he, but not...
Good point. Thanks. Yeah, very good point. Thanks. Yeah, that's true.
Thank you for the talk. You kind of gave towards the end both the very bad side and kind of the hopeful side. You working and researching this, you personally, are you mostly optimistic or mostly pessimistic?
I'm so... Well, so. So from what I know right now, I'm actually worried. So about what I should... This is the reason I gave this talk in the first place. If I wouldn't be worried, I'd say, yeah, go ahead, just do it. So I think we have to be careful. And I think it might go faster as some people think it will happen. So there should be some caution. So not everything is going to be bad. So I don't want to be the end of the world is coming, actually. But we need to be aware of the problems in order to address them, and better address them today rather than in 5 years when it might be too late. So it's a bit of both.
A lot of the examples you showed of AI today are, things you do with machine learning approaches or neural networking, which are basically, glorified statistics. It's a bit more complicated than that, obviously, but it's basically just to give it a lot of data and a lot of power to correlate stuff, and then you get a result. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is what will give us AI? We just give it more data and more processing power, and then we get something that is, if we give it enough, we get something that is indistinguishable from human, Turing test-wise? Or do you think there is something more fundamental to understand about a human that can't be achieved with just enough statistics and enough data and enough processing power?
Well, I think it's not as easy because, for instance, AlphaGo learned by playing against itself. So it's not only it's still statistics because it tries out different things and learns from itself, but it's not been given examples. It learns from the rules. So it explores the rules of the game by playing against itself and then learns from that. So it's not only examples. And frankly, I think there's probably not much more to that. It's just more complicated. Like the human mind, I'm atheist. I don't think there's a soul or anything that makes us special. I think we're just, living, thinking matter. And I'm afraid that we have all we need to create a general AI that is capable of being like a human, essentially. And there are many interesting examples that show that even the human mind is not as conscious as it thinks. Like we trick ourselves. Like, for instance, if you look in the mirror and you concentrate on your one eyeball and you switch your eyeball and back and forth, what you will never see that your eye moves. You will only stare at one eyeball, and the movement in between is cut from your brain and is done so without you noticing. So there's this thing that we think that we have, this consciousness that is uninterrupted and constant. Well, it actually isn't that way, and we are just not right now figuring it out. Now that we see how AI works, we are learning many things about ourselves that are surprising and disturbing. So when we learned that the Earth was not the center of the universe, we are right now learning that our intelligence and our mind, the way it works, is not as glorious as we thought it was. So. Yeah, right. It's getting more efficient as well, right.
At the beginning, you said that AI didn't have any empathy. Closer. Are you aware of any ideas of how empathy could be added to AI?
Sorry about?
Are you aware of any ideas of how empathy could be added to AI?
Well, there are some things underway. Actually, It was a bit the intro where I said there's lack of empathy. It was a bit exaggerated because there are projects where the AI system learns how you feel. So it just by looking at your face, it has face recognition and facial recognition, and it understands whether you are anxious or happy or sad or whatever. So it learns that actually with a higher hit rate than humans. So we now have the question is what does it do with that information? Like how do you create an agent or an AI system that uses that information in order to be more sympathetic, more empathetic, whatever, you know, that changes its behavior according to that new information. But I'm sure it can be done.
So regarding the many examples, I'm a little bit confused about one of them. The one with the tiny drone that explodes. Is that one fictional?
Very good point. Thanks for asking. Yes, this is actually still fictional. This was created as an advertisement. So there's the link is on the slides. This one was created. So last year there was an UN convention about war related stuff. I don't remember the title of the convention. And they created that movie for that UN convention in order to get lethal autonomous weapons disallowed. So this isn't existing today, but it's easily imaginable to create that. So it's not hard. Like it's not like it's not sold yet, but you can create that at home. So
I want to go back to this intelligence thing and what we are and consciousness. I still think it's something different. Also with this staircase you showed, like there's the ant and there's the monkey and then there are we. Actually, there's a big difference between us and the monkey, more than you can train monkeys to respond to questions and you can train them to use sign language and this, but not one of those monkeys ever asked a question. So it's the same with the computers. You can train them to answer questions perfectly, and that's what we do with sclerified statistics right now. But you can't, so far, no artificial intelligence system has proposed its own question, problem, whatsoever. And that's actually what I think is missing there somewhere. Even AlphaGo also has solved the problem proposed by humans and all of those problems. So I was wondering, do you really think there's something coming that could ask questions and propose problems?
That's a very good question, and I think it's so AI. I'm not aware of projects in that direction, but I don't. So right now we don't have the general intelligence. Right now the systems are very very specific in their goal, and I think that. So I'm not aware of anyone ever tried to train AI to ask questions, or to understand them to understand. So a question essentially is a way to retrieve information, right? This is a way, it's like, it's an additional channel. So you don't see something, you ask. And so far, AI is very limited in, so you either have systems that can talk or are trained on human language, or you have systems that are visual things. And I'm not aware of anything that has tried to create AI in such a way that it tries to gather information on other means than being presented that information. But it's a very interesting question.
So, thank you for your talk. Are you familiar with the term embodied computation or embodied artificial intelligence? Oh, no. I try to frame it, but you have not to answer it. The main idea behind this is, as you said, for artificial intelligence to be active or to work, it's not really needed a physical body. But on the other side, there are scientists who are working in embodied computation who says to reach super artificial intelligence or to have the level above mere intelligence, we need some physical body because the human intelligence has some component from its embodied behavior, from its embodied cognition that is needed to reach true intelligence in a physical world and to really be super artificial. And I wanted to hear if your thoughts about it.
So I think that nobody really knows how to create super artificial super intelligence, otherwise we already would have it. And there are many theories how, like, what is important and what is needed. And some even say that you need additional things, like that was the previous question, whether, you know, there's something missing yet. And we don't know. So until someone has created that, we don't know what is needed as an ingredient. My personal opinion on that is that we have everything we need. So I don't think that we need embodiment for that, but that's just my personal opinion. So nobody knows yet.
Me again. I want to come back to the thing with what is it that distinguishes the human from the computer? Because you said it's nothing. We just need to, you know, advance far enough, and then we emulate the human with a sufficient enough Turing machine, basically. But I always think of it in a computational theory manner, because there are problems that we can mathematically, you know, say which are undecidable by a computer. Like, for example, there are certain statements in the theory of natural numbers which are true, but which we can prove that they cannot be proven by a finite machine, which is Gödel's incomplete theorem, of course. But still, a human can look at these statements and say they are true. So surely there must be something that makes us more powerful than the machine, not just in a computational manner, but in some fundamental way, which any however advanced machine can never achieve.
Well, I think that these AI machines, they are statistical creatures. So they are not based on logical inference. So they don't, like, you can give them problems that have no correct solution, or have multiple correct solutions, or have no solution at all, and because the statistics, like, the human is very inconsistent. Like, if I have to decide the same thing twice after a year, I probably make a different decision, and I'm not based on logic. So what my behavior and my decisions are not at all based on logic. And I think that the same is true for AI systems. So these statistical things, they make a decision one way or another, depending on what the inner state of the neural net is, or whatever it is that you know, how it's implemented. And I don't think that is related to one another. Like, you can, for instance, you can create a Turing machine on a modern computer, but you can also create it on a machine of balls instead of zeros and ones, and you can create it on a machine that runs with water or pneumatically or whatever, and it doesn't matter. The resulting machine is still a Turing machine, and the same will be true for AI. So whether the machine that does the calculation underneath is a Turing machine doesn't matter for the AI system that's the next level, so to say, of computation. So it doesn't need to be logical. It can answer undecidable problems in a way that's not consistent, because it's implemented that way.
Okay, so, but you say that if a human is just a very advanced statistical Turing machine.
That's my personal take, yeah.
Yeah. Hello. I wanted to give an answer to another question. There is AI that can ask questions in a sense. It's called active learning, or also reinforcement learning. Does that the AI can choose which data it gets for learning. The second thing is, Gödel's incompleteness theorem also applies to humans, I think. And either way, it doesn't matter, because it's the Nirvana fallacy. It's not about being a perfect system, it's being about a good enough system. And also, you could say that each neuron does a computation, and you have a lot of them, you just simulate them, and then you do a better algorithm instead, or 10,000 times the neurons. Last thing, I think you forgot a very important foundation, the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. They are mainly and only concerned with the AI alignment problem, how we align our interests and the interests of the AI, and it's harder it becomes harder the more you think about it. I encourage everyone to really try to solve it, because if you first think about it, you think for 1 second, oh, it's easy, and then, oh, no, actually not, and actually you're yes. having nightmares.
That's true.
The OpenAI is actually kind of doing the opposite. I mean, it's very cool what they do, but they have been called in the internet open nuke, because when everyone can build a potentially super intelligence, then it's more dangerous. But nevertheless, I think it's very important, because I don't think the human genome is more important than individual humans. So, and we are all slowly rotting. We just got used to it culturally. So it's the danger of AI should be seen relative to the danger of human rotting. And yeah, I think the people living today should not rot. It's not about the abstract human genome and humanity as a super organism. It's about actual humans.
Thanks for pointing that out. I will look at that and put it on the slide. And yeah, very good comments. But it wasn't actually a question, right? So thanks.
What do you think about that?
Well, thank you. As I said, thank you for pointing that out. And I'll have a look at it and put it on the slides.
I have a little different question. There's a video on the internet where some engineers kick a robot, so to prove that he's first very stable, and second, if he fell down, he can stand up by himself. And so in the comments, they wrote, "Oh, the poor robot." Yeah. So they showed that they have feelings. Do you think at one point we will have feelings for robots?
Well, I think we shouldn't humanize AI. It hates it. So I think this is very likely. There's a movie that I didn't put on the list. It's called Her, and it's about a guy falling in love with his operating system. And I think this is very realistic, because we're all in constantly looking for the perfect partner, so to say, the one that always has open ears, understands everything, and if I'm angry, it can soothe me and you know, calm me down, and if I'm down, it can, you know, raise me up and give the perfect answers. And I think at some point we will have that. At some point we will have a system that gives the perfect answers, that is always the perfect partner, that is, you know, loves you, whatever that means in that sense, but it shows affection, it says how great you are all the time, and we will get that. So I'm perfectly sure about that, and it will be a bestseller. So there's also commercial driving behind that. So it's going to happen at some point. So we will have to deal with that as a society and as individuals at some point.
So, do we have any more questions? Okay, last question.
You said earlier that the Neuralink was an institution that aims at sort of connecting us to AI or to computer systems. Do you think that maybe uploading a human mind into the computer to give them the same processing power as AI is maybe the solution to the AI problem? So instead of creating it and being overrun by the AI, we become the AI?
I think that's a very good question. I have problems with that. So there's so the thing is that we don't know how AI works yet, and perhaps we will never understand. We'll just create it by accident, and it will just work, and we won't understand why, and it won't be able to explain itself to us. I don't know. There's this thing, the theorem called the Chinese room thought experiment, and the thing is that if you have a so the idea is you have a room, and you give it Chinese text, and you get the Chinese answer. And inside there's a huge book with all the answers, so to say. And there's a guy transcribing the answers on text and handing that out. So there's no individual thing that has understand. And the guy doesn't understand Chinese. and nobody in the room understands Chinese, and still the room as a system answers correctly. So the question is, where is the intelligence there? And the same is true for AI. We don't know where the intelligence is an emergent thing. So one neuron is not intelligent, and five are not, and 10 are not, but somehow 10,000 are. So there's something happening in between, and there's no way to cut it, right? It happens at some point, and it's undefinable when it does. So you can say, like, the same thing with other things, like wind or waves. Like, one atom is not a wave, and two atoms are not a wave, but, I don't know, 10,000 atoms can form a wave. And at some point, you have this transition to higher things. And the same will be true for AI. And I don't know, and we don't understand it, and I don't think that uploading your consciousness into AI will be a solution for that, because your bodily consciousness will still be here. You hopefully don't die then. And even if you do die, we have no way to understand if that thing that now is in the cloud is the same thing as it was before. You can't, like, who is you? Like, what part of you is essential for being you? We don't know that. And therefore, I don't think that this will help solve the problem. And as I said, because humans are very inconsistent with their goals and their things that they do, I also don't think that it will solve the alignment problem. Because if you have a process that says, okay, now you have your brain uploaded into the cloud, now do you trust the cloud with your life? Like, would you? So, I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much again. And I'd like to end with, I think, the final question. Is this AA stuff the beginning of a better world, or is it our worst nightmares become true? I don't have the answer, but I'm sure we should aware it's up to us to handle now, to reach our finest goal, to hand over a world someday to our children in which the AI stuff is still made to serve men, and not a world ruled by a digital psychopath. Thank you very much for your attendance. Have fun, enjoy the rest of the night. For those who want to stay here waiting for the next talk, you're welcome. All the others, I'd like to take out anything you brought in. Thank you very much, bye-bye.